Nearly 775,000 people have passed away from COVID-19 here in the United States. More than half of those deaths now have happened in 2021, with blame going to the Delta variant, in some cases relaxed public health measures, and low vaccination rates in some communities. COVID cases are going up in many Midwestern states. We're going to talk about the latest COVID news, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you want to know about the current COVID situation in Wisconsin? Have you gotten a booster shot? Do you plan on getting one? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Jonathan Tempty is Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Tempty served on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. He's also served on the CDC's Board of Scientific Counselors. Dr. Tempty, welcome back to Central Time.
Well, thank you so much, Rob. It is always a pleasure to join you.
Good to have you back. What are you seeing in our latest COVID numbers, especially here in Wisconsin lately?
Well, we are unfortunately seeing things increase rapidly again. So as you mentioned, across the country, it's almost 775,000. For Wisconsin, we have had nearly 860,000 cases and almost 9,000 deaths. But unfortunately, we're seeing things increase again with the cooler and shorter days.
Right. This was the bad time of year last year. Are we thinking it is just the weather and our habits and going inside again that seems to be linked to this increase?
Well, I think there is a lot of things kind of hitting all together. As you mentioned in your introduction, we have the Delta variant, which is very transmittable. Coronaviruses in general tend to like colder temperatures, you know, the shorter days and so on. So we tend to see much more activity during the winter months. One of the big things, though, is our children going back to school and having transmission occurring in that setting have really come on as our leading group in terms of the number of cases. And then, as you mentioned, relaxing on our public health measures. And unfortunately, in Wisconsin, 41% of our citizens have yet to receive any vaccine. And so I think all these together add up for the possibility of this surge coming back and taking over for the next month or so.
Let's compare and contrast the numbers we're seeing for vaccinated and unvaccinated. I keep seeing different charts, whether it's from the CDC or states or individual hospitals, and they're pretty staggering, right? The difference in hospitalizations and fatalities between the vaccinated and unvaccinated. What are we seeing?
Well, I think the most important thing I can try and carry across is how incredibly effective the vaccines have been, even in the face of waning and even in the face of the Delta variant. So looking at the data that were used by FDA to approve the booster doses, we see that individuals who had received the full complement of the mRNA vaccine and did not receive a booster dose, in that group, that was the placebo group for the study, nobody was hospitalized. There were a number of cases of infection, but they just were not serious. On the other hand, people who did get the vaccine and a booster were about 98 to 99% protected overall. So these things work really, really good. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, that we're seeing so many hospitalizations and unfortunately the predominance of death in people who are not vaccinated.
We focus a lot on the death numbers because of COVID. There are some pretty chilling accounts out there, a new one in the Gannett papers in Wisconsin, of the experiences of people who have gone through intensive care for COVID. Can you talk about the sort of things that even survivors face during their infection and some cases afterward?
Well, we're so used to seeing on television shows people who have been in a coma, for example, for a year, wake up and walk out of the hospital. And unfortunately, that's not the case. When people are in the intensive care unit, for example, on a ventilator, after a week or two on a ventilator, we start talking about doing a tracheostomy or putting a hole through the front of the throat for that ventilator. People have atrophy of muscles. Despite the best care, sometimes they develop sores or bed sores. And these are all things that require long-term rehab. People who are coming out of an intensive care unit are oftentimes looking at weeks to months of physical therapy, respiratory therapy, and other therapies to get back to where they were before they started. And this is one of those unaccounted for tolls of COVID-19, just the number of people who have this long-term recovery after a successful treatment.
Talk to Dr. John Tempty from the UW School of Medicine and Public Health, looking at the latest COVID trends and numbers. And you can join in with your questions for our guest, maybe your own experiences with COVID. How are you looking at the booster shot issue? If you're already vaccinated, if you've already gotten boosted, or are you planning to? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Dr. Tempty, you mentioned kids, a part of the increase in the number of tests. We know, fortunately, kids aren't as vulnerable, it seems, to the worst effects of COVID. They're not invulnerable, but much less at risk. Now kids under the age of 12, many of them eligible to be vaccinated. What would you say to parents who are making that decision of when and how and where to vaccinate their kids?
Well, first and foremost, when a vaccine is approved either through the traditional licensure or through emergency use authorization, as this one was, they undergo very, very tight scrutiny in terms of the safety, making sure that we're not seeing anything that is routinely associated with a vaccine. We never know about all the safety problems until it's out there in widespread populations. But if I can just toss out, we have now across the globe had about 7.5 billion, with a B, doses of COVID vaccines out there. And we just have not seen much in the way of serious safety concerns. What we do see are rare, they're isolated, and most of the time people recover completely from these events. So first and foremost, they're safe. Number two, they're incredibly effective in preventing infection, and beyond that, preventing those awful outcomes such as the hospitalization and death. You know, children are wonderful in that we don't see the high levels of hospitalization. We see very few deaths in children, but we still see that as well. And every hospitalization, every death in a child is a preventable occurrence with this virus. And so I think we're obligated to do as much as we can to protect our children.
And Dr. Tempty, a couple new tools possibly in the works. Merck, the drug maker, applied for emergency use authorization for an antiviral COVID pill. Pfizer has one, I think, pending FDA authorization. What do we know about those drugs and what kind of difference they could make?
Well, first of all, they have names that are difficult to pronounce. Molnupiravir is the Merck drug, and Paxlovid from Pfizer. And these are both medications that will interrupt the reproduction or the replication of the COVID virus. And these are both drugs that will be most effective the earlier you start them after infection, much like the drugs we have for influenza. So it's going to be very, very important to, once these drugs are available, to assure that they get to people very, very quickly. And from the clinical trials, we're seeing that they are very, very effective. Just looking at the Paxlovid, it was about 90% effective in preventing significant outcomes such as hospitalizations in people who had already been infected. So I think we're going to see a lot of use, but you also have to keep in mind that these drugs are going to be dependent on having ability to diagnose COVID rapidly. And so we'll have to be having sufficient tests out there, and we'll have to have a medical system that can respond. And unfortunately, across the country, what we're finding are huge numbers of people in the healthcare professions leaving their practice through burnout and through other attrition. So particularly, you know, we look at our nurses or respiratory therapists and people like that. We just have to take a deep breath and hope we get through this and do everything we can in terms of therapeutics and prevention to minimize the great toll this is having on our healthcare providers.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in Luck. Chris, hi.
Hi. I have a question. We had COVID go through the house, my two children and my wife, and I stayed home. I slept with my wife, and I mean, I was in proximity of it all. And I'm also a public school teacher, and I'm exposed like crazy. And I was spared COVID. I haven't got it. And just wondering if you could expand on that, why that may have been, and also wondering about your thoughts of getting a booster.
Chris, before you go, I just wanted to ask, have you had an antibody test to see if you might have had it in the past?
No, I did not.
Okay. Chris, thanks a lot. That's an interesting question. Diseases can be fluky, Dr. Tempty. It's possible he was heavily exposed and didn't get it. It's possible he might have had an asymptomatic case. A lot of luck, if you'll forgive me, Chris, could go into that, right, Dr. Tempty?
Yeah, I think you answered the question as well as I could, Rob. There could be many different reasons. You know, even, for example, we do see some people who seem to be immune to respiratory viruses in general. We see other people who tend to come down with things. So understanding the immune system is really challenging, but I think the most likely is either a prior infection that was inapparent or thought to be something else that provides that protection going forward. That being said, if somebody has not been vaccinated previously, we would recommend doing the full course of any one of the three vaccines that are currently approved in the United States.
Thanks a lot for the call, Chris. We're talking about COVID-19 with Dr. John Tempty, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have thoughts, questions, or experiences to share about COVID, vaccines for kids, boosters for the grownups? 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation, take some more of your calls coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. We pick up our talk now about the latest COVID news with Dr. John Tempty from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. We'll go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Randy is with us in Wisconsin Dells. Randy, hi.
Hey, good afternoon. Yes, I'm a person that tested positive last year in October, quarantined. I think I might have been like asymptomatic. I didn't have hardly any symptoms, just runny nose and a little bit of a headache, fortunately. So I've had all three shots of the Moderna vaccine that my booster net. And I was wondering, what's my possibilities of transmitting it on to my grandchildren if I come in contact with anybody?
Randy, thanks for the call. His risk, Dr. Tempty.
Excellent question. The answer is very, very low. I can't say that it's impossible, but we do know that you have had now four different exposures to this virus or parts of the virus through infection and vaccination. And compared to somebody who has not had any of that, your risk of contracting COVID is very, very low. And if you do, the amount of virus that would be in your secretions, in your cough or sneeze, would tend to be very, very low as well. So I think this is why we see CDC recommendations, and more locally here in Dane County, for example, with our public health order for masking, saying that you don't need to mask if you're fully vaccinated and around people who are also either vaccinated or who are at low risk. So I think I would go forward without having a whole lot of concern about that risk for transmission.
Randy, thanks a lot. It's a great question. And Dr. Tempty, that's a good opportunity to ask you a question I'm guessing a lot of people are asking you. Thanksgiving, what would you say is a good, safe get-together?
Well, Thanksgiving is traditionally the kickoff period for respiratory viruses. They're the more significant ones, like influenza. And when you consider that on this coming Sunday, I've heard 3 million people are going to be traveling, and we're associating toddlers and elderly people and everybody in between, and we're bringing college students home from the campus, and we're all mingling. And at the same time, keep in mind that that definition of a close exposure that we all knew very well last year was spending 15 minutes within 6 feet of somebody. And think about the football game, think about sitting around the table. This is an ideal setup for transmission. And so, number one, trying to have everybody vaccinated would be a wonderful idea. If not vaccinated, if people are able to test before they travel, that's a good idea as well. If you have concerns, you know, trying to spread people out a little bit, you know, I hate to say this, but in some situations where you're just not sure or you're immunocompromised or concerned about your own health, wearing a mask can be beneficial. And then I think the other things to keep in mind, and this might be the most important, if you are feeling sick yourself, stay away and expect that of other people as well. So those are kind of the guidelines. We're looking forward to a Thanksgiving far larger than last year, but I'm happy to say that everybody in our party, people who are coming over to our house, I think we're 100% vaccinated. And also a number of us are tested fairly frequently as part of a surveillance program. So we're feeling pretty good this year.
Let's go back to our callers now. Jay is with us in Milwaukee. Jay, hello.
Hey, hello.
What'd you want to ask about, Jay? Yep, go for it.
Well, you know how on the arm that gets shot sometimes, you can get in the armpit, you can get a soreness. Rare, but they said it's okay, it's normal, last a couple months, but it's been 4 months and I still got a soreness. And that's just my general question. Also, I've been holding off. That was in July I got it, beginning of July. So now it's November, it's still sore. Now, I heard the comment that opinion that that's normal, it's a sign it's working and everything, and that's great. So, but my just general, that's the general situation and question is that okay? It's been 4 months, and I'm holding off on the booster because I don't, you know, I'm waiting for this to kind of go away or something.
And Jake, can I ask which shot you got? Because it matters for the timing of the booster.
Moderna, I believe. Moderna.
Okay, thanks for the call. So 6 months, I think, is the wait on that, Dr. Tubby, but that soreness, that pain afterward.
Yeah, we do know that the Moderna vaccine has a little bit higher rate of swelling of the lymph nodes, and sometimes that can be pretty significant, but it tends to be transient, so lasting a few days to a week or two. So I would think that 3 to 4 months is pretty prolonged. And with that, I would suggest being seen by your care provider just to make sure something else is not going on with that.
Thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing that. Good luck to you. We'll go to Jason now in Bloomer. Jason, hi.
Hi, everybody. Hey, so I've got 5 boys. We were sitting down to dinner today, and I got a positive result back for one of my kids who had an exposure in school. None of them are vaccinated yet because, of course, that just kind of came out. Mm-hmm. Me, my wife, and my father-in-law, we all live in the same house, and we're all vaccinated. But I guess my question is, what is the time frame on actual quarantine in this situation? Because, of course, one can get it. The next one can get it after that. And I guess we have a trip planned in about a month, and we're trying to see if we need to cancel that or kind of what that looks like.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that, Jason. Dr. Tepti, what do you say to him?
Yeah, well, I'm really sorry to hear that as well. And from studies that my group has done here at the University of Wisconsin, we're able to show that, you know, in almost half the households that we've looked at, when there's one case, basically the entire household will become ill with COVID-19 within a 2-week period. And so a couple thoughts here. So the current quarantine recommendations would be about 10 days after that exposure. And I would argue that within a household situation like you're describing, we're not worried about one kid getting sick and then a week later, the next kid and a chain like that. This is going to be occurring much more rapidly. That being said, there's still an opportunity, I think, just to go ahead and get anybody who is eligible vaccinated. There would be no harm in vaccination, even if there was an exposure going on. And we do know that within 7 to 14 days after that first dose, we start seeing significant benefits of that vaccine. So if you're looking at a travel plan coming up in a month, that would be my suggestion.
All right. Good luck to you and your family, Jason. Dr. Sebsi, I want to take a minute. A couple of things we've talked about here today would be helped out, those antiviral pills, Jason's situation, if we had more access to rapid testing. Are we getting more of that online now in just our last minute or so?
Yeah, there are many more tests out there. The thing to keep in mind is the rapid tests don't perform real well for people who have low levels of virus, but they still are a good tool to have. And I think this is going to be an area of rapid increase of technology coming into the long haul with this virus. And unfortunately, I think we're going to be in the long haul with this virus. It's not going to be going away. We won't defeat it, but we're going to have to learn how to live with it. And the way we live with that is the testing, hopefully the rapid testing, the availability of multiple tools such as the antivirals, the vaccines, and good common sense to try and get on top of this.
Dr. Tempty, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us again.
Well, thank you so much and have a very happy Thanksgiving. Take care now.
You too. That's Dr. John Tempty, Associate Dean for Public Health and Community Engagement at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. Dr. Tempty served on the U.S. Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and on the CDC Board of Scientific Counselors.